Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and round two of New York State standardized testing for grades 3 through 8 starts next week. And WNYC's Beth Fertig got an earful from a group of teachers and principals on the Common Core standards that the new tests are based on. She joins me now to talk about that. And the big jump just reported in pre-K applications from the just-passed deadline for New York City. Hey, Beth.
Hi, Brian.
So you spoke recently to some teachers and principals to gauge their opinions on the tests and the tougher Common Core standards that the tests are supposed to be aligned to. They seemed open to Common Core in general, from what I gather of your roundtable. But here's the principal of PS 234, Lisa Ripperger, on her disappointment with the test.
That didn't feel as if it was really the best assessment of what the Common Core has been asking schools, school leaders and teachers to do in terms of better honing their own instructional skills at teaching kids to be deep, big intellectual thinkers.
So what did that principal represent in the group, and is she raising a widespread issue there?
She is raising a widespread issue, but I should also say that it's a group of very, very critical parents, teachers, and school leaders from Manhattan, largely, who organized a big rally right before Easter, Passover, vacation break. She was among about 30 principals from schools in Manhattan and District 2 who organized this rally because they were so concerned with what they saw on the tests. So I can't say that she's speaking for all teachers and principals across the city schools, but she is speaking for a pretty well-organized and vocal group of critics who believe that this is not what the new standards are about and that these tests were poorly constructed in a way that just is tricking kids and confusing them and not really testing them on the thinking skills that they thought the standards were about.
And on what went into these tests that some consider tricky, you also heard frustration with the lack of access to the preparation for the test or the preparation of the tests from seventh grade teacher Nicole Dixon explaining some of what it's like for teachers.
The analogy that I say to some of my friends is, you know, imagine you have a car and it's not working quite right. So you bring it to the mechanic and the mechanic says, well, I'm going to run a secret battery of tests on it. And then 3 months later, the mechanic says, well, your car got a 2.4 out of 4. It's approaching standards. And you say, well, what does that mean? What can I do to fix it? And the mechanic says, well, I don't know because the state won't give me access to that information.
Beth, explain that. What information can't the teachers get access to?
Well, she's talking about two things. First of all, you don't get your test scores as a teacher until several months after the kid has left, right? You get it over summer vacation. So you don't get that information right away. But also what she's saying is that in the case of these tests, because they're still new, it used to be that the state would release the tests afterwards. And you'd see, you know, last year's tests and the years befores, and you'd get to know what types of questions were on them. The state said, well, that's part of the problem. You know, everybody focused too much on test prep. Now that you have these new tests, the state says that they cannot release them. And they can release some of the test questions. Last year, they released 25% of the questions. But they say they're not allowed to release all of them because, first of all, it would prevent them from having enough new questions next year. They're still building up a new item bank because it's a new test. So they can't release all the questions. And they also say that it would lead to that same problem of using all of last year's test questions to prep for the next years. Now, yesterday, I believe the president of the American Federation of Teachers, Randy Weingarten, sent a letter to Pearson, which is the company under contract with New York State, saying, we think this is this gag order is wrong. Teachers should get to see the tests. They should get to discuss them because teachers aren't allowed to discuss specific examples from the tests either. They couldn't tell me when I had them come to WNYC, what didn't you like about this test? They couldn't give me specific questions that they hated because that would break their confidentiality rules, you know, and, you know, release too much information and violate test security practices.
Is that always the rule under the old battery of tests?
No, because the old tests, they were released afterwards. In this case, the state was saying, look, you know, the tests are still being given. There were makeup tests being given. And also, we don't want everyone to know what the test questions are because we can't, you know, we won't have enough new questions for next year.
But these test prep books that kids get for all kinds of things are usually tests from past years.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
They release old tests so kids can study the kinds of knowledge that they're expected to know.
Right. And the teachers also say that it helps them understand how to teach, you know, preparation skills for the kids and understand what types of things they're trying to get at. But then you run into the question of then there's going to be too much test prep. So it's an interesting, tricky situation. You know, I see why the teachers are saying, you know, we should be able to see more about this. The state, however, says, well, we involved you guys in the planning. They claim that there were about 300 teachers across the state who were involved in writing these test questions, editing them. It's not just a Pearson-dominated thing. They included New York educators, but there's still tremendous skepticism, especially when it's a big corporation. There's people who really believe that this corporation is going to make money off this at the expense of the kids. It's more about the testing than about the learning. And so you have that battle going on, especially because teachers are now being evaluated partly based on how well their kids do on these tests.
Looks like we have a test prep tutor calling in with a take on this. Michael in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Michael. What do you do?
I'm a researcher at Columbia. Part of my program is I tutor kids at PS 154 in Harlem.
Toward the taking of the statewide standardized tests?
Yeah, I do math preparation for third, fourth, and fifth graders. And yesterday we had a problem that we were working on together. And
because these math tests are coming up next week, right?
Yes, start next Wednesday.
Uh-huh.
We had a problem that they wanted to work on a geometry problem, so we opened up to the test prep materials. And it was presupposed that to understand the question, the kids had to know what an architectural plan was. And I asked all five of my students, and none of them knew what a plan was.
How old were they?
And the word plan was used all through the question. So right there, like, the way that they're preparing the kids for these assessments, if the testing company, if Pearson's not going to give an example of the test, then teachers are going in with prep materials that may or may not really align with really getting them ready for the exam.
Beth?
Yeah, that's the common complaint, that they don't really know exactly what is going to be on the tests. And, you know, is there going to be vocabulary that stumps the kids? Are the questions going to be so focused? In the case of the reading, the one thing I heard again and again was that they were taught to, or, you know, encouraged to find little bits of each paragraph that they were supposed to answer in the multiple choice questions instead of thinking about the big questions. You know, it was more the forest for the trees. And, you know, they found like it was very tricky. And it sounds like what you're talking about is that's just a type of vocabulary term that you need to prepare your kids for that could stump them if they're not ready on the test.
What grade did you say you were working with, Michael?
Yesterday it was fifth grade.
And they don't know the word plan and what that means? Should I be surprised by that?
No, they know. If you said, hey, let's make a plan to go do something, they're cool with that. They're like, great, what's the plan? But in terms of the question laying it out that says some designers want to create a park space and the plan calls for a space that's 15 meters on one side and it has a total area of 300 square meters, they didn't know what a plan was and they also didn't know the word dimension.
Why couldn't they get that in context?
In context, where they don't know anybody that's ever come to them and talk about designing a park. A park
right.
is just a space in the middle of the housing development.
A plan in that context meant a blueprint.
Right.
That's exactly right. For them, none of them knew what a plan was.
And there's going to be more word problems, right, on the math tests. They're trying to get the kids to think
I
more
think
that way.
A huge barrier for assessing math is the language and
yep.
the way these problems are being written. I hope that a lot of people coming out doing research on the best ways to assess kids can get on these assessments for Pearson because the way they're assessing what the kids know versus what they actually know is two different things.
Michael, thank you for your call. I appreciate it. But Beth, in your roundtable with parents and
teachers and a principal.
I see you heard from at least one participant that the tests are better than last year, which was the first year of the Common Core standards-based tests. So is there some hope that they'll get there eventually or they're on their way?
You know, this teacher who teaches at the Eagle Academy for Young Men in Queens she thought that it had gotten a little better. And but when I said, you know, how optimistic are you? She really couldn't say, you know, but she thought she likes the idea of the Common Core. But again, she felt like these tests were not exactly living up to it. But what she did say is she likes that it's pressing kids to do more writing. And she thought that the quality of the writing was very good, that she felt like teachers and kids were really working hard to improve the writing and to think deeply about these questions. But the test itself just wasn't there.
Patricia in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Patricia.
Hi, Deborah. I'm a long-time listener, first-time caller.
Thanks. You do professional development with teachers, is that right?
I do, all across the tri-state area. I've been working deeply with teachers in New Jersey and New York as they unpack the Common Core and understand its implications. And I think there has been an excitement about the Common Core and what it could mean, but everybody has been waiting to see the assessments. And the point I wanted to make is that New York State, at least for the next school year, opted out of the PARC assessments, which is one of the major two consortium who are developing Common Core assessments throughout the country. And all different states are deciding what they're going to use to assess the Common Core. And New York State was going to launch them, I believe, next year, and now they're waiting. And so alternately, the ELA has been recreated to be the New York State ELA to be Common Core aligned. Yeah, there are other major assessments being developed that districts mm-hmm. across the country are looking at to say, does this fairly represent deeper levels of critical thinking and evidence-based questioning? And so There's just a tension there between what states are doing and what the rest of the country is doing.
I think that's really interesting because the excitement that you say that some people have about the Common Core, and when I've had Common Core advocates and designers on the show, they say, look, standards had gotten so dumbed down over the last 10 years under No Child Left Behind because all the school districts and the states just wanted to look good on test achievement. The Common Core is real in terms of emphasizing critical thinking. So you're saying, how do you make a test in a multiple choice format for the most part, but with some writing, that that actually reflects a child's critical thinking in a standardized way? And I guess that's tough.
It's very
tough. That's right. How can I think across text and make connections and apply it in a meaningful way? Some of the new test items, if you check out Smarter Balance or PARC, the Partnership for Career and College Readiness.
These are the two different national tests being developed.
Yeah, are coming up with some interesting ways to be a little bit more interactive. And the other thought is that some of the assessments will become more computer-based or pieces of it where the students actually interact and manipulate text. And so districts are also racing to figure out how in the world would we do computer-based assessments, which would hopefully speed up the process with which teachers get feedback to make the test meaningful and inform their teaching.
Oh, really interesting call. Thank you, Patricia.
I just want to say one thing, Brian, which is that there's not universal love for the Common Core, to be fair. There are folks like Diane Ravitch who speak out about how they don't really believe that it's been around long enough for anyone to know. There's not been enough studies to know if this is really the best standard to use for teaching our kids. You know, we don't know enough about the curricula that are being chosen. So, you know, they would say it's still, the jury's still out.
WNYC education reporter Beth Fertig. Next story, and I guess it's not surprising, given how much attention it's gotten, that applications for pre-K in New York City, now that that application period has closed for next September, those applications are up 36% over last year. Is that a lot?
Yes, it is. Over 40,000 people have applied to have pre-K slots in the New York City public schools. And even though the schools have added more seats, that's still twice as many applicants as the number of available seats. There's going to be about 20,000 seats in the fall instead of 16,000 last year. So the city is adding seats, but the demand continues to outpace the supply. Now, what the city is saying is starting in June, or actually earlier than that, they're going to be knowing which community-based organizations are going to be offering more full-day pre-K slots because they expect come the fall there will be 33,000 seats. That's how they're going to get to the total number of 53,000. It'll be 20,000 in the public schools, 33,000 in community-based organizations. And so those organizations, starting today, they're going to be announcing where some of those are. They're going to do it in batches over the next few months. So parents will get to apply to have their children in those types of pre-K settings if they don't get in the public school seats.
And is there an advantage or a disadvantage to have your child in a pre-K that's in an existing elementary school or that's in a community-based organization of some kind that's going to pick up the overflow? Do we care?
I think it depends on what's most convenient to you. And if you're thinking that getting your kid in the pre-K means you're guaranteed a seat in kindergarten, though you're wrong, that's not going to happen. You still have to apply to kindergarten.
Oh, wow.
But, you know, it gives you a chance to kind of get to know the school. So maybe people like that, but they may also like their community-based organizations. So we'll see. You know, there's lots of long-standing organizations serving different neighborhoods that people are aware of, and they're going to have full-day seats now instead of half-day.
But you might be in the hallway with fifth graders, maybe seventh graders. And the CBOs, the private community-based organizations, they may just be little pre-K bubbles.
Right. 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 And the city schools have to now gear up for adding a whole other grade, you know, adding many more kids in the pre-K level.
And this is the de Blasio theory, that we can add this almost all at once and make it work with tens of thousands of additional kids compared to this past school year. And yet experts have been pretty adamant that it's not enough to just have a place for kids this age to spend the day, but really to achieve the goal of narrowing the achievement gap for kids of all income groups, you need well-trained teachers, well-tested programs. So is anything happening at the Education Department to make sure that that's what we actually get for all these kids in September?
They're hiring 1,000 more teachers for the fall. And they're saying that they've already had almost that many applicants, but of course they want more so they can be choosy. And yeah, you have to get well-trained teachers. And the city says it's going to have summer training for the new hires, but only 5 days, a week-long summer institute for them. Now, some of them may be very experienced teachers, depending where they're coming from. Some of them may be brand new. But in order to get good ones, you have to pay them better. Now, that traditionally, the public schools have paid higher because they're unionized teachers than the community-based organizations. They would pay maybe 10 grand a year more to start. And partly what the de Blasio administration did to level the playing field was they've diverted some of the new state funding to the CBOs so that teachers who are hired by a community-based organization will pay, you know, they'll be paid about the same.
As a public school teacher.
Yeah.
Well, that makes
sense. Even if they're not in the United Federation
and,
of Teachers.
Am I right or wrong that there was something in the state law that was passed to facilitate all this? I know it was under consideration, where the city would actually get reimbursed more per student if that student is being taught by a teacher with a certain level of certification. And if they don't have that certification, then they get less from the state. Is that something you're familiar with?
Well, your salary depends on whether you have a master's or a bachelor's. And
that's,
you know,
the salary for the teacher. But in terms of how much the state is actually going to fund the city for each kid. In other words, they wanted to provide, my understanding was, an incentive for the city to get really qualified early childhood education instructors.
Yes.
And therefore, they'll reimburse the city more per extra certified teacher, whatever that standard is.
Yeah, I don't know the exact amount, but there is a financial difference.
Last thing. We're speaking later in the show with City Council member Vanessa Gibson about the council's budget proposals that were just released, including the one to fund universal free lunches. And that's being spearheaded by public advocate Tish James. As I understand it, this is to eliminate the stigma of free lunch status for low-income kids because they have to show their special card or whatever, and everybody else knows that they're a low-income kid, save a lot of paperwork. But it's controversial. How come?
It's not that it's controversial. I think everyone's just trying to figure out how to make it work. There's a program that the Department of Agriculture started a few years ago that lets districts avoid all of the paperwork involved with signing up kids for free lunch. So instead of having the families fill out this household income form, they look at how many families are in the system who qualify for supplemental nutrition assistance, you know, things like that, so that they, as long as the school has at least 40% of kids who qualify for these types of additional aid, federal aid, state and local aid, then they know that that many kids are poor enough to qualify for free lunch, and they'll give all the kids in the school a free meal. So other cities like Boston and Chicago and even Syracuse have tried it, and New York City has some schools participating on a pilot basis, but the plan is to now have all schools take advantage of this program so that the parents don't have to fill out the forms. Mm. The city knows that as long as 40% of the kids at a school would qualify, all of the kids will get it. But they want to make sure every school, even if it's a school on the Upper East Side where you wouldn't have 40% of the kids qualify, the city council wants to kick in another $20 to $24 million to cover everyone. So this avoids collecting the forms. This makes sure all kids are going to eat for free. It takes away the stigma, although I've spoken to principals who say it's not so much the stigma because the kids don't always know, depending on the school, who's getting free lunch and who isn't. Yeah. It's more like a pain for the principals to keep calling these parents and collecting these forms, and they're not going to get reimbursed if they don't get all those forms, and they have to charge some kids' meals, and it's a pain for them.
Does it threaten our federal funding at all? Because I've heard a concern expressed that we get federal Title I funding, that's funding for kids in poor neighborhoods, based on the number of those who qualify for free lunch, because that's how they count the heads of the numbers of poor kids on which the funding is based. Is that a threat?
The reason that the Department of Agriculture came up with this alternate form is so that they could have another way of counting the heads that doesn't require the households to fill out the forms. Now, the de Blasio administration says it's sympathetic to this, it's very interested in this program, but it does want to check with the feds about, is there any threat of losing the funds by this different formula if you apply it citywide? So I think there just needs to be some check-in with Washington. There seems to be universal interest in this. I haven't heard any critics of it. There's just concern about, are we going to get every dollar that we're supposed to get?
All right. WNYC education reporter. Beth Fertig.
And can I put in a plug on schoolbook.org? We have a lot of stories about the pre-K. We even have a great video that NPR produced showing what a good pre-K classroom looks like with a well-trained teacher and all the other criteria. So I just want to put it out there.
Thank you very much.